Imagine a plant that was considered so divine, so powerful, it was worshipped as a god. Its worshippers believed its effects were nothing short of miracles and could give believers immortality. Yet, we have no idea what it is. Its identity has been veiled in secrets over millennia. So what was this plant, and how did we lose our grasp on its power? I'm Megan Brame, and in this episode of The History of Plants, recovering the soma plant, from its origin in Vedic India to contemporary attempts to unlock its mysteries and identity and identify its descendants, we'll be joining the quest to solve this puzzle that's left scholars, mystics, and scientists with more questions than answers. Part 1, The Divine Brew. So to begin our search for our first historical footprint, we'll turn to some ancient texts, which are a treasure trove that detail soma's power and significance. The Rig Veda, one of the oldest religious texts in the world, dating back perhaps as far as 1500-1200 BCE, is our primary window into soma. The Rig Veda's ninth book, known as Soma Mandala, dedicates all 114 hymns entirely to Soma Pavamana, or purified soma. Interestingly, in the Vedic tradition, soma is not merely a plant or a sacred drink. It's also a powerful deity in its own right, worshipped with fervent devotion. This deity Soma is even called the master plant, or more accurately, Vanaspati, the lord of the forest or king of plants, depending on your translation, highlighting its profound connection to the plant kingdom and its purported life-giving essence. Beyond its deification, though, the Rigvedic hymns also powerfully describe Soma's effects. Rigveda 8:48:3 famously proclaims, quote, "We have drunk Soma and become immortal. It was exhilarating, transformative, and believed to grant immortality, access to divine light, and communion with the gods." The hymns consistently speak of an ecstatic state of the mind expanding and perceiving beyond the ordinary, offering visions and a profound sense of unity with the divine. Soma also played an integral role in Vedic rituals and sacrifices, where its essence was offered to various deities, with Indra, the king of the gods, being its most prominent recipient. References to Soma, though, extend beyond the Rigveda into other Vedic texts, notably the Brahmanas. Compiled from around 900 BCE onwards, these texts offer further insights into Soma's ritualistic use and, crucially, its celestial connections. A prevailing belief held that the moon was Soma's ultimate source, its essence residing in plants and water, especially during the new moon. For example, the Shatapatha Brahmana, dating back to roughly 700 BCE, says, quote, "Now this king Soma, the food of the gods, is no other than the moon. When he, the moon, is not seen that night either in the east or the west, then he visits this world, and here he enters into the waters and plants. He is indeed a treasure for the gods. He is their food." This intertwining of King Soma with the moon suggests a profound cosmological significance, symbolizing the cyclical nature of life, death, and rebirth, which, if you think about it, aligns with its supposed life-giving and immortalizing properties. So the Vedic texts paint a vivid picture of Soma as a divine transformative substance, meticulously prepared and ritually consumed for over 1,000 years before the Vedic period. But how was this ethereal beauty truly captured from the earthly realm? What precise steps, what ancient tools, what secret knowledge transformed a mere plant into the very drink of the gods? Part 2, the Soma ritual. So let's pull back the curtain on the actual ceremony. The Rig Veda doesn't just sing Soma's praises, it lays out a meticulous, almost forensic, account of the Soma ritual, detailing the sacred process that transformed a simple plant into the drink of the gods. The Soma sacrifice, or Somayana, held a central position as one of the most important Vedic rituals. The prepared soma juice was offered to various deities, but as we discussed earlier, Indra, the king of the gods, featured prominently as the main recipient. These rituals were conducted by priests, known as Brahmanas, who oversaw the preparation and offering and consumed a portion of it themselves. Kind of makes sense that, like, you know, you get to, like, play with the sacred plant and make it sacred drink. Maybe you get a little taste too. The process of extraction, though, was quite specific. It typically involved using broad-based pressing stones, sometimes called graven, which were themselves revered, to process the soma plant. Occasionally, an ox hide was laid down as a sort of like an altar base, and mortars called ulakala and pestles known as masala were used to crush the plant material, ensuring every drop of its essence was released. After extraction, the juice underwent a vital purification. It was strained through a sieve or a filter, often described as made of sheep's wool and poetically referred to as an eternal fleece. This eternal fleece would then produce a clear, pure liquid. This filtration step was essential for Sona's purity. The purified juice was then collected into wooden vats known as Drona Kalash or other vessels and poured into a designated reservoir. Often, Soma was mixed with other ingredients to enhance its properties or its flavor, including milk, curd, honey, and barley. The timing of the Soma ritual was significant, often performed at specific times of the day, morning, noon, and evening, and was sometimes linked to lunar cycles. The act of consuming Soma was believed to create a bridge between the mortal and divine realms, fostering a profound sense of unity and empowerment. Despite these meticulous descriptions of its preparation and its incredible perceived power, the core question remains, what plant was this divine elixir actually made from? Part 3. Botanical suspects and clues. This is where our investigation truly takes a turn into the unknown. Despite the detailed hymns and fervent rituals, the precise source of Soma remains shrouded in the mists of time, with a long list of suspects, each with its own set of clues and contradictions, but no definitive smoking gun. One of the most popular suspects is the ephedra plant. The chemical compounds ephedrine and pseudoephedrine found in ephedra are very powerful stimulants. They directly impact the central nervous system, and the effects, increased alertness, sharpened focus, and a feeling of energy, could align with the exhilarating and mind-expanding aspects of Soma described in the Rig Veda. Ephedrine, in particular, even shares a structural similarity with amphetamines, and its ancient use in related Indo-Iranian cultures adds another layer of intrigue. This theory has been notably championed by German Indologist Harry Folk. Viktor Sarianidi, a Russian archaeologist, found possible remnants of ephedra stalks in ancient sites in Central Asia and similar traces at Bactria Margiana culture, BMAC, sites. Still, the evidence remains circumstantial. There's no direct archaeological record showing ephedra, and some argue that Soma's most profound described effects, like visions and divine communication, went far beyond mere stimulation. Another option is a controversial yet compelling suspect, and that is Amanita muscaria, the iconic fly agaric mushroom. This vibrant red and white fungus, long linked to shamanistic traditions in Siberia and beyond, is certainly capable of inducing vivid visions. Its primary psychoactive compounds are ibotenic acid and muscimol, which interact with neurotransmitters in the brain to create pronounced altered states of consciousness, confusion, and visual and auditory perceptual changes. This lines up directly with Rig Veda's descriptions of Soma granting access to divine light and inducing profound altered states. So could this have been the source of Soma's divine light and the ecstatic visions described in the Rig Veda? The theory of Amanita muscaria as Soma was famously championed by R. Gordon Wasson, a fascinating figure in his own right. Before retiring as a vice president at J.P. Morgan in 1963, Wasson, along with his wife Valentina, who was a pediatrician, became famous for introducing Americans to hallucinogenic mushrooms. Their groundbreaking 1957 Life magazine article, Seeking the Magic Mushroom, detailed their experiences in Mexico, with Valentina later publishing her own account of what she described as technicolor visions. This dynamic duo even coined the terms mycophile and microphobe for the love and fear of mushrooms they observed globally. Wasson believed these so-called divine mushrooms were the key to ancient spiritual experiences, postulating the presence of a global prehistoric mushroom cult. He even came to prefer the term ethnogenic, meaning generating the divine within, over hallucinogenic for such substances. But here's the problem with the Amanita muscaria theory. The Rig Veda consistently describes Soma as a juice extracted from the plant using stones. That preparation method is totally at odds with how mushrooms are typically prepared or consumed. Plus, while some hymns describe ecstatic experiences, there's no explicit mention of the kind of vivid hallucinogenic properties you'd expect from Amanita muscaria in most Rigvedic hymns. Still, here's an intriguing clue. An embroidered woolen textile discovered in a Xiongnu Hun woman's grave in Mongolia, dating back to over 2 millennia, depicts a Zoroastrian ceremony centered around a mushroom resembling psilocybe cubensis, suggesting a particular link between psychoactive mushrooms and ancient ritual practices in related cultures. Then we have Sarcostema acidum, also known as somalata, a leafless shrub with a milky juice, which is a detail that aligns with some Vedic descriptions of soma being pressed. This theory finds support in traditional Indian accounts and is upheld by some Shrauta Brahmins who continue to use it in modern-day soma rituals, arguing for its historical continuity. Now, phytochemical analysis of Sarcostema acidum shows the presence of alkaloids and stereoglycosides, but precise compounds responsible for any significant psychoactive effects aren't very clear and are still being debated. If this were soma, its effects would likely be more subtle than the profound transformations described in the Rig Veda, which, you know, admittedly, some historical religious texts are known to kind of embellish a little bit. Also, some Ayurvedic descriptions of Sarcostema actually mention leaves, which clash with the Vedic portrayals of soma as a leafless plant. Paganum harmala, or Syrian rue, offers another possibility with its well-known psychoactive alkaloids harmine and harmaline. These are MAO inhibitors and can be hallucinogenic, so they could certainly induce the ecstatic states and altered perceptions associated with soma. The thing is, historical records suggest harmala was typically burned for fumigation, not pounded and pressed for juice extraction as described for soma. And while soma was considered rare and hard to find, harmala is a relatively common weed. Even cannabis sativa has been proposed, notably championed by modern researcher Chris Bennett. There's a striking linguistic connection in Tibetan for cannabis, soma rasa, bearing resemblance to Sanskrit's soma raja. Cannabis is rich in cannabinoids like THC and CBD, as well as aromatic terpenes, which are known for their psychoactive and synergistic effects that can produce both euphoria and altered states of consciousness. While cannabis was known for energizing warriors in some cultures, the Rig Veda's meticulous descriptions of soma preparation primarily involve pressing stalks or shoots, not leaves or roots, which are the main psychoactive parts of cannabis. Adding yet another layer to this list of suspects, some modern investigators believe soma wasn't a single plant at all, but was a carefully mixed admixture, perhaps with Syrian rue playing a key role, much like the psychoactive brew ayahuasca. Dr. Matthew Clark, for instance, has proposed this, quote, ayahuasca analog theory, suggesting a combination of plants that work synergistically to produce a broader spectrum of effects, potentially matching the varied descriptions of soma. The truth, it seems, remains cleverly concealed within the ancient verses, leaving us with a lingering question. What was this divine plant that captivated an entire civilization? And why, despite centuries of inquiry, does the mystery of soma continue to captivate scholars and mystics to this very day? Part 4, The Search Today. So despite centuries of rigorous investigation into our botanical suspects, the true identity of soma remains elusive. Yet, the narrative of soma continues to hold appeal in the modern world, representing a timeless human quest for spiritual insight and a deeper understanding of consciousness. This enduring mystery has held a significant and lasting cultural impact. The very concept of soma famously inspired Aldous Huxley's dystopian novel Brave New World, where a soma drug is used to control society. While the textual evidence provides the foundation, archaeological findings offer tantalizing, though often ambiguous, glimpses into the material culture surrounding ancient soma practices. Ritual objects like mortars and pestles, which could have been used in the preparation of soma, have also been unearthed. These archaeological glimpses, while limited and open to multiple interpretations, still offer valuable supplementary information to the textual accounts, providing tangible connections to this ancient soma world. So what does this centuries-long quest for soma tell us? While archaeological findings offer some very tantalizing clues, the precise identity of the soma plant remains an enduring mystery. This ambiguity, however, only serves to enhance the profound and lasting significance of soma in the history of human spirituality and the ongoing quest to understand the nature of consciousness. But, you know, perhaps the enduring mystery of soma is its greatest power, representing a testament to the human desire for meaning and connection. I'm Megan Brame. Thank you for joining me on another episode of The History of Plants. Jump into the commentary episode on Patreon or check out the video version on my YouTube channel, Plantrums. Until next time, greenies, stay curious and don't forget to flourish.